2937. Mark, do you want to let us know what we are looking at?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Representative Hill, House Bill 2937 permits the Travel Information Council to charge providers of travel services for the use of their tourist and motorist information internet website operated by the council, or for the use of the council-sponsored website in cooperation with another public or private entity. And wanted to make note that this does have fiscal impact. And it's on the third page in your packet.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Gribsko, and I am the director of the Travel Information Council. The attached brochure outlines the programs that we administer, and through these programs, we are funded in total by annual sign permit fees, sales commissions, and historic marker grants. We have received no public money since 1972, when the legislature enacted the bill that initiated our agency. They funded it with $5,000, and the other funds received now go directly into the council programs. House Bill 2937 allows the TIC to expand its ability to provide services to the tourism businesses. Federal mandates allow only so much room on any highway for signing. We are nearly saturated and see little to no growth in sign offerings. In addition, federal restrictions limit the amount of signing for individual businesses at any location. We have a wait list of nearly 350 businesses who desire to get the word out about their business. Allowing us to provide more technological venues would assist those businesses on the wait list and those already using the program. House Bill 2937 allows TIC to partner with ODOT by expanding the ODOT TripCheck website to include traveler businesses in an itinerary modality. A rendering of the TripCheck website homepage is attached to this testimony. The ODOT TripCheck website allows the motorist to plan any trip using weather, construction, and other information from the current site. ODOT would allow us within their website to provide the user with places to eat, to camp, or lodge, as well as visit unique Oregon attractions. Sales of the business listings and links will allow other fund revenue to pay for maintenance and upgrade of the TripCheck website. ODOT would be able to continue maintenance of this site with a less significant drain on their budget. Other funds would not only add to the maintenance and upgrade funding, but it would also assist ODOT in promoting their website nationally. Attached to this testimony is a letter of support from the state traffic engineer, who is ultimate superior of the TripCheck project. In consideration of this project, TIC hired David Evans and Associates and Castle Rock Consultants to review feasibility of the project. Excuse me. Through researching national trends and focus groups, they found the project to not only be feasible, but trend-setting on a national scale. Few state organizations have included private business promotion in state websites. Oregon is being watched as pioneering this effort. In developing the language for this bill, we neglected to set an emergency clause. Establishing an emergency clause would allow us to begin implementation of this program immediately in the biennium in June. We would ask the committee's consideration of amending the bill to include this clause. And I'm open for any questions that you might have.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where's the Tourism Commission in regards to your bill? And just fundamentally, I don't know if I want to be a pioneer in putting advertising on what I view as government websites. I'm wondering, you know, why should Oregon be the pioneer? I'll ask another question after you answer those.
Okay. Chairman Hill, Representative Patridge, the Tourism Commission has been part of the discussion through this whole process, including some of the industry members of the Tourism Commission. And the idea is that this also builds their link, because they're linked onto the ODOT TripCheck website, so that people that come into the ODOT TripCheck website would not only go to the Tourism Commission, but also use ours too. People going into the tourism website would also be able to link into the ODOT TripCheck website. The support is very community-based because the businesses are very interested in this. And we did focus groups with the businesses who are very supportive of this idea. They see it as a, as something very valuable because it is a state website, because it will have more hits, and because they would be able to be part of that program just as they're able to be out on the roadside, on the roadside signs. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, but why should Oregon put commercial advertising on government websites? And then secondarily, what are you going to do with the money?
Okay. The reason that we're considering this is because we have a program in place that's saturated, and there's a lot of people out there that want us to put advertising on a government website to help them get the word out. So we're responding to the businesses themselves. The money is going to go, once, you know, we will have some management administration costs, but other than that, it's going to go directly into helping ODOT maintain that trip check site. We'll be partnering with that.
So ODOT runs this web server?
Yes, they do.
I guess just as a comment, after coming off of the city council, where sign ordinances were one of the hottest, most hotly contested issues surrounding that, and concerns about website traffic, and people don't like all the advertising that occurs on websites, I guess I am just concerned about more clutter, and is it government, and is this government's role, and I need you to make that case.
Okay.
I don't feel like
I understand.
I don't feel like you make that case. So, what is it going to do for me?
Okay. Chairman Hill, Representative Patridge, no banner ads are going to be at the front of the ODOT Trip Check website. It will be a button that says Visitor Services. So when a person enters into that website, they will see what you see on the rendering that I attached to your
where's the
testimony?
Rendering?
Was handed out today. And it's the page right after the testimony itself. So if you look at the listings that go right under the picture of Crater Lake, what you see is a list of different kinds of things that can be clicked onto. All they're going to see is traveler services. And so once they got into the traveler services part, they would be able to build an itinerary based on if you wanted to go from Portland to La Grande, you could look at your road conditions, you could look at your road cams, you could get all the information, and you could make some decisions about where you might want to stay as part of that itinerary that you're already building with the other parts of the trip check site. So that was very important to us. We didn't want the state website to all of a sudden start looking like the AOL front page ad that you get when you go in there. It's going to be part of the ODOT website built in, just like the SkyCam, just like the trip check road conditions. And we're working very hard with ODOT, who had the same concerns you did, to make sure that it doesn't start looking like a billboard industry in there. What will happen is that people can just start building in so that if they find out they have construction issues, weather condition issues, they'll know where to stop, where to eat, where to stay.
I see in the back of your flyer here, the URL, retnet.com.
That is not what we're talking about here, though. We're talking about the ODOT trip check. This, the retnet was put on by my staff because it shows a listing of our programs. It's a home page, but we do not sell any kind of advertisements there. It's a whole different website.
So Is this brochure for citizens?
No, it's a brochure that educates people about who we are and what we do.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's just general information, anybody wanted to find out some information, Council?
Exactly.
So Trip Check is an ODOT?
Yes.
Is that in conjunction with you, or?
No.
You're just seeing this as an opportunity to sell advertising in other agencies?
It, actually, it's been a partnership effort between ODOT and TIC, and the Travel Information Council. It actually started at a retreat where ODOT brought this concept to the Travel Information Council because they saw that Traveler Services was not part of their website, and they wanted to add that. And they liked the idea of having revenue generation so that it could help maintain and keep this website going.
Is ODOT here?
No, they did send a letter of support, the last letter that you see in this packet.
Why the Oregon Travel Information Council as opposed to the Tourism Commission that's linked to VCBs and other people from all over the state?
Chairman Hill, Representative Patridge, because we have the systems and the mechanisms set up to do those kinds of sales. It's what our mission statement and what our activities have been since 1972. The Tourism Commission does not want to get into the business of revenue generation. Their idea is that they would prefer just being able to provide the listings, and then they're hooking up to some reservation sites, but they did not want to get into this business at all.
And so fiscal on this is actually ODOT's fiscal.
That would be our fiscal.
They're estimating $227,000 to make this work?
That estimate came from the consultant, and that's getting in and developing the website to open up to allow us to do the, to add on our portion of it.
What consultant?
The consultant that, I'm sorry, Representative Hill, we had a consultant review this, the ones that came back and said that this was a highly feasible project and that could set the national trend. And what they did was look at what it would take for us to get into the Trip Check website, and they came up with the figures that you see. And part of those is a manager that would be able to manage the process. And all of those would come directly from the sale of the website advertisements, and so it would fund itself and still help ODOT fund its website.
Is this included in the governor's recommended budget?
No, because, excuse me, Representative Hill, we are not in the governor's recommended budget.
I understand that, mm-hmm. that ODOT, you said there would be a person to manage it.
No, but we would fund that. That would come out of our
agency. It would be in ODOT's budget.
I don't know how you're going to spend all this money and use ODOT's web server
right.
Okay. Be having an impact on ODOT's budget.
Because we would pay for it out of our own cash flow, but we would hire the appropriate people that would be able to come in and develop the website, so it would come out of our budget and not ODOT's.
You note here that you're looking for an amendment, emergency clause?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
I just have a comment. I'd like the bill to be more narrowly tailored, and I'd be happy to meet with you.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not comfortable with it right now, the way it reads, in terms of narrowing the focus, narrowing, you know, what the advertising can be or look like. I think the impression, the ability, the unforeseen consequences at some later point in time are much larger
okay.
than this. I would like to see it more narrowly tailored. I'd be happy to work with you, but at the present point in time, I'm not comfortable with it.
All right. That'd be my pleasure.
And my suggestion in terms of, we also have a discussion with Dave White at ODOT and Debbie Bryant, consultant that we have on this security. I think that seems to be a pretty high number for developing those changes, and I'm just trying to understand what that means. Okay.
Very fair. Representative Patridge, would you like me to set up a meeting with Tourism Commission too?
Well, I can just meet with you guys. That's fine.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2937? Hearing and seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2937. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2235. Mark, explain where we're at on this. This is a return.
Certainly, Chairman Hill. This is House Bill 2235. It eliminates the state printer and state printing section. The original language has gone through quite a few changes up through the Dash 5 amendments. And we're looking today at the Dash 5 amendments, which you will find in your packet, which tend to incorporate the majority, both of these amendments. Mr. Chair.
We have
good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge. For the record, my name is Mike Fries, and I'm still the state printer. I'm here today to talk about the proposed amendments to House Bill 2235. And at the last hearing on this bill, we had some discussion about the need for actually amending the Constitution, which was the concept that was covered in House Joint Resolution Number 4. Since that meeting, we have been operating under the assumption that a constitutional change is not necessary. And given that, if we're all on the same page there, the House Joint Resolution does not need to move forward. And in fact, we then can, within House Bill 2235, make the necessary statutory changes to the state printing law, ORS 282, to give us the flexibility that DAS needs to manage its publishing and distribution operations effectively. So very quickly, the amendments we're making, we're leaving the bill largely intact, and we are simply reinstating ORS 282.080, which defines, basically requires DAS to hire the state printer. We're also inserting some language which defines a printed public document, and also, which will be referenced later in the statute. And we are also cleaning up some language, as mentioned in the last hearing, that deals with the firearms registration. It was an inadvertent oversight that deleted the requirement there for the state police to provide firearms registration. And then deleting lines 25 through 30, which will delete the reference. It decouples this legislation from that House Joint Resolution, so it doesn't become necessary for the constitutional change for this legislation to take effect. We believe that if we can assume that there is not a constitutional issue, this will give us the flexibility that we're requesting, and we think it is in line with the direction that you had given us at the last hearing. Any questions? Great. I wanted to thank you for your flexibility with us on this issue and for giving us the opportunity to work with legislative counsel to draft these amendments. Thanks.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2235? Everybody have any comments?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Grover Simmons, for the record. Thank you for inviting me to comment on this. First of all, we want to restate our support of the what we gather is the main thrust of this bill, to put into electronic format the work of the government, make that available to citizens through all the agencies and departments. If that's the purpose of the bill, we again sign on to that with, we're eager to sign on to that. I got a copy of the amendment only about half an hour before this hearing, and I tried to match up the adding and the deleting and the numbers, and I'm still a little bit concerned. First of all, we'd like the bill to pass and move on to another committee if that's your pleasure. But we did have a question on page one about line 10, why we are still deleting the words state printing section means the administrative unit within the Oregon Department of Administrative Services handling state printing functions. That does not relate to the what we thought and still believe is the thrust of the bill, the electronic issue. So we're curious as to why that is still being deleted. We have no problem with the First Amendment right at the top, line three. That simply deals with a bonding issue. That's academic and not of concern. The record of the department under page two, line 12, would have the prerogative of establishing qualifications, duties, and the job description. We hope and believe the operative language, however, is applicable under the provisions applicable of the Oregon State Constitution. So we don't really have a problem with that if it doesn't eliminate the public printer and it doesn't do damage along the lines we were discussing last time. And of course, we have no objection to this cleanup language on the firearms. With that, I just wanted to say if something shows up that we're not aware of, we reserve a right to comment on it somewhere down the line. But as of now, it is 100% more acceptable than a week or so ago. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I think comments in terms of changing the way in terms of refer state printing section, just the way we're writing everything into DAS is everything's in DAS and they can organize it. I don't think that's functionally anything substantive at the end of the day. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2235? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2235. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2235.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2235.
Representative Patridge moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2235. Discussion?
I just want to make a quick comment. The only other comment that I would make on here is, well, I see that upon printing, you'll make an electronic version of the document available and send it to the state agency. Still doesn't say that you're going to make that available to the public. I think that is critically important. I've been going to the government printing office's website. I've had occasion to do that over the course of the last few days. And there are electronic versions of their documents. I've had to download about 10 or 15 different files instead of a single file. And it is certainly nice to make it a single file and make that available to the public. So I just will leave it at that. I'm happy with these, but
if you'd like, I could very briefly explain the situation. Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, in fact, the government printing office has a little bit larger charter than the state publishing distribution operation. It includes warehousing and distribution of forms and documents, so it was a logical extension for them to move into the warehousing and distribution of electronic documents as well. We feel that the intent would still be the same here. However, We, as the publisher, create the document, would distribute that to the agency, and the intent would be they would make it available to the public on their website or on the state central website. So the same effect would be achieved.
Great. I didn't have a problem.
I would also add my two cents that I noted that as we were getting correspondence back from Mike on this, Mike actually had a PDF document of the bill in the form it looks like as it's printed, which is substantively different than what the legislature puts out on its website. And I did have an occasion to talk to our own ISF asking, why does the state printer have a PDF of the bills, and why aren't we putting those out so that our constituents are looking at the electronic versions of the bills in the same form that we look at them, which would be much better than the text format that we have on our website. And hopefully we'll get a connection there, since I know from previous discussion they're actually putting them into PDF formats to print them. So it's not, there's nothing else to do, just move them over to your directory. And anyway, I found something.
Simplicity is.
So. Anyway, Representative Patridge moves the -5 amendments, and without objection, they are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill.
We are sending this bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2235 as amended to the Smart Growth and Commerce Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 2235 as amended to the Committee on Smart Growth and Commerce with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Is that objection? So ordered. Okay. And are you Blemmett? Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2443. And Mark, that's what we're looking at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, House Bill 2443 directs an educational service district to create homework hotlines for the use of the school districts, with the stipulation that telecommunications carriers comply and help with organizing the system and implementing the telecommunications system to do so. Establishes income and corporate excise tax credits for costs associated with donating equipment or labor to an education service district for this purpose, and then applies these tax credits to contributions made in tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2002. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Rod, do you want to come up?
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Hill, Representative Patridge. Any program that's designed to increase collaboration between parents, students, and teachers and empower students to take direct responsibility for their own learning is worthy of consideration and support. And it appears that this bill attempts to create that collaborative atmosphere by creating homework hotlines for schools hosted by educational service districts. It's been my experience that homework hotlines can be effective tools for increasing communication between teachers and parents and students. These hotlines can take many forms and meet a wide variety of needs. A typical homework hotline is described in the bill is a voicemail system where a teacher can post an assignment and then a parent or a student can retrieve that assignment. I wanted to bring up a couple of examples. The Migrant Education Service Center that's hosted at Willamette ESD runs a very successful homework hotline, but it's not a typical homework hotline. It goes beyond the definition that this bill defines. It's a partnership with Salem-Keizer School District and Capital Community TV. The Migrant Education Service Center set up a system where students can call in, retrieve assignments much like the typical homework hotline, but then it goes beyond in the fact that all the prompts are both English and Spanish to meet the migrant population. In addition, this homework hotline is interactive. It is in conjunction with Math Magica, Math homework TV show where live representations of math concepts are presented, and then students can call in live on the air and receive help with their homework. I point out this successful homework hotline example for the following reasons. First, it's successful in that numerous Spanish and English-speaking students routinely access the system for assistance. Secondly, it goes beyond the narrow definition of a homework hotline as defined by this bill and incorporates other viable technologies to enhance the system. And thirdly...
Let me jump in and ask you a question. How do you measure the successes in terms of how many people use it in that context? And then, you'd have 10 people calling each time. I'm just curious, what's the breadth of what's occurring right now?
Chairman Hill, the evidence here would be anecdotal at best, what I could provide you. But and as far as firm numbers of how many people are calling in, I really couldn't tell you. But it is it's on the air on a daily basis, and students call in on a daily basis. And I could provide you with that information at a later time.
I'm just trying to get a sense in terms of, it helps a person.
I can speak to another example that I can bring up. My previous experience in the Corvallis School District, and we had a homework hotline that was hosted by the local newspaper, the Gazette Times. That hotline was wildly successful, and we know, for example, that 250 teachers participated in that. They posted their assignments there, and several thousand students would access the system on a weekly basis, and that's based on PBX statistics that we kept on the system.
Okay. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. I feel strongly that the facilitation of homework hotline systems would enhance enhancing the learning opportunities for thousands of Oregon students currently. I'm concerned that the bill is in its current form may not support many existing homework hotline partnerships that are not telecommunications in nature. And I bring up the Corvallis example that was supported by a local newspaper. Another example, I'm also concerned that the narrow definition of the homework hotline may not support the most current and innovative technology that's available to create this environment in different modalities, such as the web. And as an example, Willamette ESD is preparing to roll out a system called Parent Link this next school year that is web-based as well as telecommunications-based and provides access to assignments and to assistance via the web and the phone.
How do they plan on doing assistance via the web? Is it going to be like a chat room kind of an approach where people are asking questions and there's someone monitoring and posting the answers, or is it sort of go there and you can find class notes? I'm just curious in terms of how it is going to be interactive, or is it sort of a static environment?
Yes, Chairman Hill, the initial rollout will be in the form of frequently asked questions and static pages based on assignments that have been posted that would be provided by the teachers. The revisions of that after that would involve a more live and interactive incorporation of VTEL systems, which are based in the schools that were provided by Senate Bill 622, as well as live chat and other modalities such as a call-in live operator type of tutorial.
I think this is all well and good, and the technology is wonderful, but why are we mandating? Why do we mandate this? What's the need for it? I don't hear an outcry. I don't see a bunch of people sitting in the room saying, I can't get my homework assignment. My buddy would usually get it for me, or the teachers would extend it a day. Why this? Why tax credits? Why mandates? There's nothing in the law to prohibit a local school district from doing this thing if they want, or local ESD. If the local school districts want to jump on board from doing it, why should we make this a state law? I think it's a wonderful idea and wonderful concept and everything else, but why mandate it through state law?
Chair Hill, Representative Patridge, I think the answer to that in my mind is the fact that while this represents an incredible opportunity to increase and enhance the learning environment, it also represents an inequity in that many school districts would like to offer this, but can't afford the infrastructure, can't go out and seek out the partnerships, and the very nature and charter of the educational service districts allows us to do that on their behalf and then realize scales of economy for these types of systems.
Okay.
Any further comments?
No.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Floor is open.
Good afternoon. Committee members, for the record, my name is Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association, and I'm here to issue a couple concerns about the bill as written. While we welcome collaboration among various partners, we share Representative Patridge's recent comments and more. We like encouraging and facilitating and all of those words. We don't like mandating. We believe in local control and in taking advantage of opportunities as they present themselves to partner with community partners on these kinds of things. And we also believe in human contact, the ultimate in interactive technology. I'm a parent of two small children myself, and I believe that the best kind of approach is often that which is interactive between the parent and the teacher or the child and the teacher with respect to anything as simple as yesterday's homework or tomorrow's problems. And there are many ideas out there that our members are using with respect to this and related educational issues, such as the website issues, written syllabus. In my daughter's class, they have a fifth grader, it's a multi-year class, and the fifth graders help the third graders out and call them every night and help them with their homework over the telephone. And they're also invited to call their teachers. I think we have sufficient systems in place to address this without spending a lot of money or without passing a tax cut, yet another tax cut. Right now, fun fact to know and tell, we are giving 54 cents of every taxable dollar away in one form of tax credit or another and collect only 46 cents of every taxable dollar, and we are now facing an $850 million revenue shortfall in terms of funding current service level programs that Oregonians really consider vital. So with that, I will say that we consider the problems outweighing the good that might come of this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I did a little bit of research with some ESDs about the concept of a homework hotline and found out that it's not new. For example, South Coast ESD got a grant from their local commission on children and families to create a hotline for social service connections. They found, one, that in order for folks to use it, it required a constant program of public relations to make folks aware that this resource existed. Second, they found that the usage was extremely low. They had a homework component, and obviously that requires, in order for it to be valuable and valid, requires each teacher to take the time each day to make those entries, garbage in, garbage out. If the teacher doesn't have the time nor the inclination to make the entry, then it's of absolutely no use to a student. In North Central ESD, and this is an ESD, by the way, that covers a broad area with very few trees in Sherman, Gillam, and Wheeler counties, they've explored the concept of a hotline and realized it would take an 800 number because of the distances. There would be long-distance telephone calls. They're hoping to, within the next several years, to get a website and allow connections between students and the hotline over the website. A question I posed, what about the kids that don't have access to a computer at home? And the response was, they're going to be left out unless there's an 800 number, and those, of course, are very expensive. It would seem to me that this bill is, in response to Representative Patridge's whys, we would ask why. Why the mandate? Why the tax credits? There are a number of examples of attempts to make homework hotlines work. It would seem to me that the program for that Willamette ESD is getting started would be a good pilot program to come back in a couple years, see how that worked, and see if there are any barriers in the way to allow ESDs to create that statewide. So we would encourage you to maybe set this aside and move on. With that, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Backlund is going to testify. If we can announce just recess pending the arrival of Representative Backlund.